ever since that day, I've been able to proudly say that I'm an Aboriginal woman.
Coaches, welcome to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Coulter, joined by no one at the moment, but they will be coming later on. So thanks for jumping into the Talking Split podcast. Once again, you can obviously follow along on the social media accounts at Talking Split on YouTube, on X, on Instagram. Drills will be back up next week. We did have a public holiday down here, so no drill this last week. But they will be back up and running on next week's social media accounts. Any ratings, reviews, likes, shares, they would be fantastic to help try and grow the podcast as much as we possibly can. Remembering that if you do have anything you would like to chime into, if you've got any topics you'd like us to talk about, you are more than welcome to send those through on the Talking Split DMs and we'll be able to pick everything up from there. But given Zoe's not here, we'll get a coach shout in.
You know you make me want to have my cold chairs, have my cold chairs, have my cold chairs.
So this week's coach shout-out goes to Paul Bannister, the head coach of the under-14-1 girls at Pakenham Warriors. Paul has led the girls to multiple club firsts in winning Division 1 at the Junior Country Championships, qualifying for the Classics through both the Junior Country Championships win and the VJBL, and qualifying for the under-14 club nationals at Perth. He instills discipline and accountability whilst being nurturing at the same time, qualities that all the girls have really responded to and has helped them be so successful this year. You'll always find him at Cadinia Life Stadium helping kids from the program that need extra training, not only from his own team but whoever asks for it, and rebounding for whoever needs some extra shooting practice. A very generous man, not only with his time but with his knowledge of the sport. So great work, Paul Bannister, on that one. It is a very giving area that the coaches have, so it's great to see that recognised by someone in his own association. But if you do have any other coach shout-outs, you are more than welcome to send those through, and we'll get them on the podcast over the next few weeks. Coming up now, so we have a chat with Cass Dover. So Cass is one of the coaches at the Indigenous Basketball Australia space. She's coaching. By the time this drops, she would have coached a couple of nights ago with the Indigenous Basketball Australia games that are happening at the State Basketball Centre on Wednesday evening. So she jumps in with Zoe to have a chat about her coaching pathway and everything that she's involved with in that space. So welcoming into the podcast for the first time, her podcast debut with Talking Split, of course, hopefully one of many. Cass Dover, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Fantastic to have you in. So Zoe, obviously you know Cass from a while back.
Yeah, she's okay.
She's okay. That's a pretty. I'm happy with that.
Yeah, look, to be honest, it's one of the better endorsements we've had from Zoe for a long time.
No, I was very lucky to have Cass be my team manager for my first appointment coaching an Australian team, the under 15 girls in Guam. And I've got to say, I don't know that I would have got through it without her, because so many laughs, so much fun, but then also when things needed to be done, they were done. So it was awesome.
The mark of a good team manager, but that is not necessarily all your background. Like, you are a coach, so give us the basketball background story to begin with.
Yeah, look, I'll touch on the manager, because after that, I did enjoy myself with the company of the coaches and the girls, but
I will
never manage again. No.
Who would have thought so coaching would be less stressful?
I already had a lot of respect for managers, I will say that, but after doing that, I'm just like next level. Like, they are the bee's knees of basketball. I'll tell you what. Don't ask me to do that again, but I'm happy to support you in a different way. For me, basketball journey, I obviously played growing up, pursued playing, moved to Townsville, so I'm from the Goldie, and that's another whole journey, but then I pulled out just based on coaching and support system falling apart, I guess, and family life. So then I stepped away from basketball for a couple of years. I was about 23, fell pregnant. Then I moved back home to the Goldie, and then I started playing again down there for what is now the NBL 1, so the QBL back then. And I just saw that there was a lack of development still through the Gold Coast for juniors to come through, which was a problem for me. And so I started coaching the development team at the same time as playing. So then I blew my knee out. And I got
see
in.
See how so many coaching stories start. Catastrophic injuries. And
I think because we were doing it alongside each other, I ended up like just jumping straight into coaching. And from then I kind of didn't really look back. So, just fell in love with coaching and a whole different passion for the game, I guess. Yeah.
Was it ever on the radar early? Like, did when you were playing still, was it I'm going to be a coach when I'm done playing? Or was it just there at the right time?
No, I did do it growing up. Like, that's how I got pocket money. That's how, when I was playing WNBL, that's how I got, you know, money, went into communities and coached and schools and stuff. So it wasn't like I hadn't done it before.
Yep.
But I guess I didn't realise how much I loved it until I was fully into it, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Were there any, like, things you learned straight away? Like, was it what you expected it to be, I suppose? Because there's a lot of former players that start coaching and, like, this is way harder than I thought this was going to be. Did you have that experience?
I think for me as a player, I was never, like, the most athletic or quickest.
Yep.
So I had to be a little bit smarter. So I think I developed that part earlier through playing. But for me, when I coached that development team, I had my cousin was playing. And what got me was I was coaching, and I was coaching the way that I hated the coaches coaching me. And she pulled me aside and kind of ripped into me. Probably good that we were cousins, because she could do that. Yeah. She's like, "Oi, you're like yelling at us for this and that." And I'm like, no, I'm trying to, like, get the best out of you. She goes, "Yeah, but you're not giving us positives. You're not, like..." So I was like, took a step back. I'm like, holy crap, I'm doing exactly what made me quit the game. Yep. You know, when I was 23, I'm like, I cannot believe I'm doing this. So, like, from that moment forward, I guess it probably was good I had her in the team, and it just, like, flipped me as a coach in how I approached it. And so I think, yeah, I mean, I'm lucky that happened only 6 months into my coaching career, if you can call it that.
No, exactly.
But,
right.
Yeah, so I'm pretty grateful that she had the, can we say, balls to step up to me and say, oi, that's not cool.
Yep.
Yeah, so from that moment forward, yeah, I think that kind of got me on the other side of the emotional side of coaching. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's hard to do because, like, self-awareness is a big part of coaching. Mm. Obviously, you need to know, you know, what you're about, where you can potentially go with it, but sometimes we are a bit oblivious to things that we don't really notice ourselves, but someone external being able to come and say that to you is phenomenal.
Yeah.
And how we respond to it as coaches is the bit that matters. Like, you could have taken that feedback on board and said, yeah, cool, but I disagree and I'm going to keep doing it this way.
Yeah.
And you might not be here now.
Yeah. Like, well, probably was lucky I was 24. So
yeah, true.
24, like, 25.
Yeah, far more impressionable.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
there's also a part of it too that you have players when they transition into coaching, we don't even realise that we're coaching the way that we were coached. Mm. We don't realise, we just, because it seems normal and that's what we do. And
what's your environment?
And and so then, yeah, how lucky to have somebody who could, you know, really point that out to you.
I mean, I still push, you know, like, one of my favourite coaches revved us, but as soon as we left the court, it was like fun and that, and I wasn't getting the balance. So that was the problem, was the balance of the feedback to the negative, you know, and then moving on to the positives. What are they doing well at the same time?
Yep.
So, yeah, that was a very quick learning curve for me. But I do think, you know, yeah, it really opened my eyes up straight up what's needed. Yeah.
So where are you coaching at the moment?
I've just been pulled into head coaching for NBL1 at Southwest Metro Pirates, so in the north. I was assistant for the last 2 years, like, my daughter's under 14s, and that's a direct clash with reps. So I had resigned from NBL1, and then I ended up meeting John Newley, who was our Pirates head coach, and I was like, yeah, I think I can learn from him. You know, I was at Red City before that, and I was kind of the highest level and experienced coach there. So I didn't feel like for about 3 years I was getting much development unless I outsourced it. So I thought, why not? And he was pretty good with my scheduling, only being able to attend one training a week. And, I learned a lot from him. But, unfortunately he got the boot about 2 weeks ago. So then they're like, oh, can you step up? So now I'm head coaching again. Earlier than I wanted to kind of come back, in a sense of that. But I've gotten back into it and I forgot how much I love it. So, I mean, it's been both good and bad, like, the way it came about.
Yep.
But, yeah, like, I'm pretty grateful for the opportunity always when I get to. But, yeah, it's a pretty full-on schedule for the next month while Mia's rep season sees it out. I think she's got 3 weeks left, so,
So do you coach Mia as well?
Yeah.
Like your daughter?
Yeah, which is why it's just full on. Once you add in the scouts and the training plans and, you know, all the other stuff that comes with head coaching at that level.
Yep.
Yeah, it takes a lot away from her and then my work, so.
Yep.
So she's playing at the moment.
Yep. Well, how do you go coaching? Like, this is a fascinating topic, like, that's sort of off to the side almost, but how do you go coaching a family member, because you've obviously started that way with your cousin in particular, so it's almost you're used to it now. But what are some, look, we have tons of parent coaches in Victoria, obviously. So what are some of the things you had to deal with as a parent coach, and how have you solved them?
I can't say I solved
the look
them.
Look on your face. We need video.
Okay, so I started at a really, like when she was under nines, I coached, and it was more because there wasn't anyone that wanted to do it. I actually thoroughly enjoy the juniors. I find it really hard to decide which one I like best between seniors, where it's competitive and brings out that side of me, and the juniors where you get, you can see their development and you see the growth, and that's really rewarding in itself. But I started with her at under nines, and she'd be at halfway talking to the other girl on the other team. And I was like, oh, my God, I can't do this. And I also had another boy on the team that anytime anyone scored, he'd go and do a little thing in the middle and post. So I was like, I can't. Under nines is not for me.
Yeah, what have I signed up for here?
I don't have enough patience. So then I didn't coach that again till she was under 12s. And then I coached her top age 12s for reps. Was the first time I coached her for rep. And we did headbutt a bit.
Yep.
And so then 14s bottom age, I'm like, yep, no, I won't do it. We both agreed it was going to be better. I'll just coach her for club. And then she didn't really enjoy it. She actually came to me and said, can you coach me again for rep? So I said, yep, these are the terms. It was like, you're not allowed to back chat because I will be the coach. Yep. Like, we've got to decipher between mum and coach. And rah, rah, rah. That has not gone to plan. However, I think as this season has gone on, we've had really good open communication in the car, like before and after. So we have butted heads a bit, but luckily I've got Arnie Lovey who coaches with me, and you know, she's a Torres Strait Islander elder in our little community of basketball in the south, and so I get her just to kind of do that communication with Mia because she's got that connection. So for me, it's I'll just deal with the other 10 in a sense when it comes to the hard stuff. I just think that's better.
So. That is a great way to do it, and we do see that with a lot of parent coaches here as well. With you coach the other kids and get an assistant coach to coach your child so it doesn't blur the line, because I can only imagine how hard some of the car rides are to games from games where it's like, look, do you really want to talk about this? Like,
I did find asking her more than me telling her what I thought. After 12s, I did that this year. That was a bit better. Yep. Like, so, what did you think you did well? And then got her to say it, and I either agree or add a little bit more. And then what do you reckon you could do better, and get her to say it? I felt like that was better because it wasn't me telling her as well as telling her in the game. So that
and then getting
probably
home and having to tell her to clean her room and do her homework. Like, because it just becomes like basketball is what they enjoy and they love to do, and then it becomes another thing that they're getting told from the same person, do this, do that. So
We're with each other 24/7. Yeah. So it's not like, because I coach her at school as well.
Yep.
So, you know, it's, there's a lot.
So
come back to me when she's 18. She's even in the same area as me.
We'll review the process by the time we get to there. But how do you go with your schedule? So, you mean, obviously, a daughter in under 14s at the moment, coaching an NBL1 team, like work, everything else that goes. How do you manage a schedule while still coaching in that realm?
Yeah, well, lucky there's no video because you see all my grey hair. So that was
welcome.
One. No, I run my own academy, so I can be flexible around my own scheduling. It's doing really well, so it's kind of like hard because I want to make more time for that. But then I obviously need to make sure that I'm doing the NBL1 to the standard that I want to be doing that. So, yeah, it's just a juggling act, really. I've got a little those planner diaries that are always 6 months in advance, knowing what's coming up and stuff. So, I've just got to be on top of the scheduling.
Yeah, and it is difficult, but it's because a lot of coaching is volunteering, in particular in that junior space. Like, you are a volunteer coach before you're anything else. You might get a little bit of cash on the side for NBL, one of those sorts of things, but it's minimal compared to the hours that are required to go to. Like, it's, I think we worked it out 1 year when I was coaching juniors, and I think over the course of the season, what I got paid by the club to coach and the coaching I actually did and the admin and all that sort of stuff, it was around about like 24 cents an hour. And it's like, what am I doing? Like, why am I doing this?
And that didn't include petrol.
And it didn't. Well, and that's certainly gone up in price since that. But it was one of those things where you do it for the love of it. And obviously, there's another investment because it's not just your coaching. It's obviously your daughter playing as well. But it's such a juggling act between the two of you know, there are days where as a coach, we just had a bad day as a person. And then we have to go and be the coach in the face of everything that the people are wanting to come in and play. And we have to almost shelve some things and say, well, look, you know, I have to be the face that they need at the moment, not the one that I'm almost feeling.
Yeah.
But that's rough as a parent coach in particular, where it's like, well, my child potentially knows what's going on and why I'm in a bad mood, and I might be the cause of why she's in a bad mood, depending on what's been going on too. So it's a tough act to get all that right.
I think though with basketball, like I've had a lot of off court problems in my life, and the one consistent thing has been basketball. So like for me, coming to basketball is like my safe place as well. Yep. So you know, and I'm sure there's kids out there that is the exact reason they come to basketball as well. So,
without a doubt.
You know, as the 24 cents maybe helps for my mental state as well. I mean, it does also put more pressure on the, you know, the mental capacity, but I think the positives outweigh the negatives.
Yeah, most definitely. So you're in town at the moment for Indigenous Basketball Australia. In particular, so you got games tonight. So full transparency, this will come out on the Friday, but you would have already played your game. So we're not going to get you to predict how it goes. But
next time, so we'll next get you the week leading.
Just say congratulations.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I'm sure it went swimmingly. Yeah. Everything looked great. Can you give us a little bit of background into what all of this is? Because for a lot of people, they probably haven't seen it before and know or even be aware of it.
Yeah. So IBA, Indigenous Basketball Australia, was founded by Paddy Mills. And obviously there's a whole ops team that do a lot of work because he's very occupied with the NBA and all his scheduling. So, you know, Tyson Demos, Junes Albert and Joel Carlo do a lot of work. And then his parents, Uncle Benny and Auntie Yvonne. But it was created during COVID. He kind of came up with the idea to get something going for the Indigenous kids, and it started with the ICBL, so the Indigenous Community Basketball League, and the concept of that was having eight regions around Australia that was an accessible space for Indigenous kids to come and try basketball, or those that already play basketball to have a place for them to try and make their regional state team as such. And then we all come together for nationals. So it started in the 14s years only, so 14 years and under. By the second, third year, there was a lot of emphasis on increasing girls' participation because it was quite low. Like my daughter was 10 and I was coaching it, just playing with the 14-year-old because we just didn't have numbers. But, yeah, it was more around creating that safe environment first, like culturally safe environment, educating a little bit culturally for them. But then having basketball as the driving tool, I guess, for having that in that safe place. But also they wanted to get out in communities and try and see if there was talent outside of your normal space, like, you know, the city's living. Yep. I know we got remote communities or country, you know, spaces around here as like Victoria and New South Wales, but like you know, the Western Queensland and, you know, spaces where basketball isn't accessible for them at all. So that was a big push as well,
Yeah, awesome. And it looks amazing. Like, having a look at the socials, and I would encourage everyone to jump on the social media accounts of this in particular, the amount of work that has gone in behind the scenes to make this look like a really attractive avenue for people to go down if they want to be involved in it has been really impressive. Like, and even just some of the names that are playing now, like it's incredible how much that's evolved over the last few years.
Yeah, I think like, so for me growing up, there was two Indigenous women athletes that I looked up to. So Rahani Cox, obviously, played basketball, and I was lucky enough to end up playing with her. So that was the coolest thing ever. Yep. And then Kathy Freeman is obviously, and that was everybody's role model. No matter if you're Indigenous or not. So that was it. And then you look now and you see, I mean, my lineup, there's girls that missed out on being here that could have been in here and done just as good. Like it's phenomenal how many role models there are now. And then you look at the men's team again, it's the same thing. So I think the push in the senior level has been around exposure for them, like getting them recognised at the NBL, WNBL level and then NBL one.
Yep.
I mean, we look at the growth of like Dave Hickey.
Yeah, incredible.
Mate, insane. Yep. Like just, and now getting looked at the NBA. So, you know, you got the likes of Nate Jawa, who was the first Indigenous person to play the NBA. Then Paddy's obviously made an extremely huge career out of it. Yep. You know, it's so good to see so many female-like athletes come through. You know, yep. Shanice Swain having that, you know, while it didn't follow through to the WNBA, having that exposure there, that's just, yeah, that's, I think we're only at the beginning, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
the
that's
coolest
how it feels
part.
Too. It like watching it yep. as well, watching it grow and evolve, and it's really exciting. Because one thing you know, I love watching about the Indigenous athletes, particularly at that senior level. My goodness, are they exciting!
Mm.
Like, there's not one that's boring. Like you watch and you're like, something. They get the ball, it's like something amazing's about to happen.
Yeah.
And so the more we can encourage,
yeah.
you know, more participation, more culturally safe spaces, you know, all those sort of things. It's just going to be great for not only the communities but the game in general.
Yeah. I think like I'm not sure if I'm allowed to speak about it, but like Nate explained last night at our cultural event what his next, you know, stages of his career are post basketball playing, and he's talking about going back into his communities, like up north, and I'm sure that'll end up being Australia wide, I'm sure. But like having his face being the face of it, like I go out, people look at me and they'll be like, who are you? I've got to explain who I am so they can have that, they understand why. But it's just not the same impact. Like having Nate go out there, that's just like next level.
And you can see Nate coming from a fair way off. But like he is
but he also
giant
comes
human.
From, yeah. yes, exactly, the way he looks,
yep.
the part. He's had the career, but he's also come from those communities.
Yep.
So that's so impactful without even trying.
yeah, no, it's exactly
you know,
right.
So for
yeah,
me,
he's three quarters of the way there already it. Without yeah. even and opening his mouth.
When he talked about it, I'm just like, man, that's going to be the best. Like yeah. that's and I know from the ICBL, I personally went out to Cherbourg in Queensland, Western Queensland, with Uncle Benny and Mick when he was running the South.
Yep.
And we go, oh, man, these kids, they can play when they didn't have shoes on.
Yep.
the balls were worn out. They had like dodgy nets and everything like that. But we were like, that kid, that kid, that kid. So what ended up happening was we got a bus, or they got a bus,
yep.
and the lady that lived out there was awesome. She would chauffeur them to the ICBL. Now that's a 5-hour drive every
wow.
Sunday
crazy.
For 8 weeks or yep. whatever it was, 6 to 8 weeks. And then one of those kids made the Queensland South
awesome.
Regional team. So, like,
yep.
that was epic.
Yeah.
And for them, that was their NBA. You know, but if he wanted to then pursue it, there's now, I know, Ipswich Grammar, I know that they were recruiting out of it and helping board kids from these events.
Unreal.
And I think there was a kid from Torres Strait that went and boarded there as well. So I think they ended up getting two kids from the Nationals,
yep.
which just is now, that's like the starting point for them.
But that's also then other athletes, like that's a part of the story, right? Mm. Like, so next time you're going out into those communities and you can put a face to
yep.
what can be, you know, as a part of this process and a part of the pathway, now all of a sudden, you know, you might have 10 kids turn up the first year, then next year it's 20 kids, and
yep.
then the year it's 30 kids, because more and more are going, hang on, this is
yep.
this is something that works, you know, this yep. is something that could put me on a genuine pathway.
Yep.
Well, and there are so many, and I mean, you spoke about the word exposure. Really, for mine, is the one that kind of hits the most. It's not hard to find kids in metropolitan Melbourne, as an example. Like, there are tons of kids everywhere.
Yeah.
But going out to the remote communities where they potentially don't have a lot of access to potentially anything in terms of structured sport or even
yep.
unstructured sport in some cases, that's part of it.
Yep.
And like talking to Nick Mihai, who was obviously up in the Northern Territory, which you spoke about a couple of weeks ago, he was saying the difference between Darwin and Alice Springs, just in terms of the kids there and what they're capable of doing, how they play, those sorts of things. Like, there's just so much untapped talent
yep.
out there, but we don't know about it because we're not in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
All the time. And that's a big part of it, is being able to sell
yeah.
the story as to, hey, this is something you might want to do. Like, not forcing them, but if you want to go down this path, this is something that's accessible
to you
now.
Yeah.
And not everyone has that, to be completely
well,
fair.
The thing is, and it's something that I'm very early days trying to do, and it's great Nate's already in the process of doing it, is we go and we visit these communities once,
yep.
you know, and we go, oh, cool. And then we have the intention of going back, but we never do. So for me, like, I've had to – so I've got my own academy,
yep.
and then I'm in the early stages of getting funding and that, I had to get my certification and everything like that.
Yep.
Obviously, my journey of being a Aboriginal woman is a bit different to the traditional being in community. So yep. I've had to go and get all that. So I've only just got it. So for me, the next part is getting that funding and then repeat visits and yep. making sure that we do
yeah.
have allow them to have access. And if they want to grow, then they can. Also, my sister and I had this vision. It was quite a while ago, but now she's moved on to bigger and better things. But
meaning about Victoria? Is that what you mean?
Look, cut that. No. No. Yes, and the NBA, hopefully. Yeah. you got me on that one. we wanted to repeat visit but educate parents and coaches and then her educate referees so they can run their own games. That was something we wanted to do. We never got to do it. So that will be something that's on my agenda.
The sustainability of it's an important part of it. Like you mentioned, you don't want to go once and then not be seen again. Like if you're going to go in and invest time and energy into trying to get something that the kids and families and communities want to be a part of, you want to be there regularly enough that you can keep it going, but also leave them in a position where they can be self-sufficient in that as well. Like they don't require
that was my goal.
A visit.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. No, I really like the idea.
But I think an important part is we have a lot of listeners to this pod. If this hits with anybody and anybody's got the ability to help out in this, whether it, you know, it doesn't, funding is obviously great, but in any other way, reach out so we can put you in contact with Cass and the, you know, the people doing this great work in our communities. So, you know, we can move this along because, you know, it's, we talk about, is the tagline everybody's game?
Yes.
Yeah, so we've got to actually follow through on that and make sure it is everybody's game and not just everybody that lives in the city.
Yep.
You know, like it's got to be genuine. So if anybody does have an ability to help out, please reach out either through Talking Split Socials or reach out to Rob and we'll put you in touch with Cass.
Yeah, without definitely. A doubt. So we were just talking before that there would have been times over the course that we would have had Indigenous athletes or First Nations athletes and not been aware of it at all.
Yeah.
What can be better done from your experience with coaches to make sure that we are creating a safe space, a welcoming environment for kids that are potentially coming out of more remote communities or an environment they're not used to and then coming into, I'll use an inverted commas, mainstream basketball and pathways?
Yeah.
Is there anything that can be done from coaches in that world?
Yeah, I mean, I think first and foremost is like a genuine connection, like try and build that first because then once they feel safe, they'll do a lot more. Like even for an example, with the ICBL that first year, I distinctly remember three girls sitting down and not wanting to get up and give it a go yet.
Yep.
And we just let the ones that were running around and then like we generally had three different people sit down with these girls separately. I know I sat down with one and not much come from it. Oh, sorry. And then so I just got back up, went to the next one, and then Alana Fraser, who's Torres Strait Islander, girl who came in and coached, she's playing NBL one now, she sat down and then next second that girl's up. So it was like you've got to make the right connections and sometimes we got to be okay with it. It's not you.
Yep.
It might be someone else that can make that connection. But the main part is that we're getting them participating. So and then after that, that girl was fine with me. Like, you know, but it had to, that first initial contact was really important. But I went and sat with the next girl and then she got up with me. So it's just it might not be you and being okay for that.
Yep.
First and foremost. We all think, oh, I'm going to help. But sometimes you can't help it.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, there's normally better connections with people that look the same.
Yep.
Or male, female. So like it just kind of depends, I guess, on that situation. That would be my first thing.
Yep.
A genuine connection. Like, and then, you know, we talk about safe places. It doesn't matter if you're Indigenous or non-Indigenous, people have to be okay to fail and be supported in that. And all the things that come with coaching, you know, but culturally safe, you know, I start a lot of the time, you know, we start in a circle, in a huddle, but like with these types of events that we're doing now, you know, an actual yarning circle with a topic that we're going to be talking about, and it's like on purpose. So, you know, we've had 3 days together as a group here, First day was introducing yourself and your mob, where you're from. Second day was, you know, what are you playing for this week? Like, what does it mean to you? And then today we did our, like, our culture word and our value word that means something to us, and then explain why. So, like, I just feel like just from doing those things. Oh, and day one I stole it from an AFL coach, but it was speed dating. We did, like, a little speed dating thing. So we, like, you know, had a minute in lines and just kind of, like, whipped through. And that wasn't – that was not on – I mean, the setup was on purpose, but the topic, you could talk about anything. That was after we did our yarning circle. So I think the chemistry is really, really important. And sometimes I don't think it's spent enough time on it.
Yep.
Especially if you're in a group of people that might not feel comfortable, because that's how you open up, you know, communication and let people feel safe. They see you're vulnerable. They can be vulnerable. You know, it's, I think it's a two-way thing.
It is. And it can't be tokenistic, I think, is the big part of that. And we've seen a lot of people do it over the years, and it's like, geez, I'm not sure you're really bought into this, and consequently the buy-in doesn't come back the other way. I think that, and you hit it perfectly, like that area of vulnerability, where it's like, look, here's what I think, here's what I'm about, here's where I'm from, here's my, like, those sorts of things really matter.
Yeah.
And it goes a long way towards creating a good environment for your team. It doesn't matter what everyone's background is in that space. Like, that's how you would want your team to function, regardless of anything else. So how do you go about, like, in this sort of situation where you only have, like, little touch points along the way, getting the team back, like, is that a big part of it? Like, getting the team back together, putting things in place so that you can play your game tonight in particular, where you have limited prep time?
Look, to be honest, I'm pretty blessed. First of all, this environment being an IBA environment, it is already culturally safe. Yep. Like, we all know that, and we're all different. You know, when we talked about, like, what we're playing for, and we touched a little bit, and I won't touch on anyone else's because that's theirs, but for me, like, my Indigenous journey is so different to other people because of the way that I look, and it took me, and I say it a lot, like, till I was 23 to actually proudly say that I'm Aboriginal.
Right. Yep.
And the reason is that people question it, and that's why I'm saying with the that connection piece is, like, people are who they are. Like, and I saw this meme, and I think it's so relevant. Like, coffee's coffee, no matter how much milk you put in it. Well, I'm a latte, like a you know, or flat white or something. I don't know. I'm not flat, that's for sure. But the, you know, so like, my journey was so different. I got questioned so much growing up, you know, whereas the next person, they more got shafted because of it. So it's like, you know, and I didn't have a cultural upbringing because we were in a predominantly white community, you know, whereas people come from the north or the straits, so they've always had culture around them. So it was actually not until I got a job at the detention centre in Townsville, where 90% of the kids in there are Indigenous, and they wanting to employ Indigenous youth workers. And I was in the in our learning, like, we had 6 weeks before you could go in and work of development and training. And there was a particular week that was just purely based on First Nations education. And we're sitting in that room, and I distinctly remember because I got lectured on it, but they said, is anyone here Indigenous? And I kind of put my hand up, and there's two blokes put their hand up, like, confidently. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of half, and they're like, is your hand up or not? And, like, as in the trainer. And I said, oh, I kind of am, like, I'm part. And they're like, oh, okay. And these boys were like, what? How can you be part? And anyway, we moved on. We got to lunch. No joke, like 30 minutes later, these boys pulled me aside, like, oi, look, and lectured me on being proud of who you are, and it doesn't matter how much you are or you're not. Yep. And then the lecture went on for the whole entire lunch break. And then ever since that day, I've been able to proudly say that I'm an Aboriginal woman. And then from there, I've tried to get that education around where I'm from and, like, my mob and all that kind of stuff. So to this day, I'm still learning. But I was 23. So, like, still now, more than half my life, I was ashamed to be able to say it. So I forget the whole point of saying all that now. What was the question originally?
I got sidetracked. Who cares? It was an awesome.
That was a great
response. I just think they're like, but it can happen for any background of anybody. Mm. Like, you know, there's kids that weren't brought up with their parents, so they don't even know. Like, people's self-identity is so important, you know, who they are. to be then coming in as a group and people can confidently talk about who they are, that already puts them in their shell. So, like, yeah, that environment to make it safe for everybody. But this group of girls in particular, we've not had any – it's been so easy. Yep. Like, I'm so blessed as a coach. So I get to coach them for starters, but then we're in this environment.
Yep.
You know, and they're not all played together, but you look at them, I don't know, like you watch them train. I'm sure we watched tonight.
Yep, it's a pretty good crew.
It's an extremely talented group, but they've all got along so well. Yep. And then I just really have to hold my board and a pen and look like I know,
run some stops.
Yeah, call the time out if I feel like it.
But it is, I mean, the culture thing is something that, I mean, Zoe and I have spoken about it a lot over the years as well. We're almost jealous of it. Like you look at the culture that goes off in that Indigenous and First Nations community, and even into the Maori community from Aotearoa, it's crazy. Like the history that sort of sits there, and it's like we're both the whitest people in the world. Like the two of us, and it's like we don't feel that same connection to that.
Yeah.
Like we don't necessarily have that identity that has that history that bonds us straight away with other people.
Yeah,
and it's crazy. Like we almost feel a bit jealous of it at times.
I'm not a bit jealous. I'm totally jealous of it because, you know, I look at across the whole world, cultures that have that culture. I guess I'll say culture again. But you know, they pass things down through ceremony or you know, dance,
storytelling,
food. Like all these things, and it's like I mean, this is the most ridiculous, like, poor me, you know, we have nothing, right? A lot of the stuff is kind of our fault, but it is such a beautiful thing to see.
And
I saw some on the socials, some of the sort of ceremony stuff that's being done through the IBA, and it's just it's awesome to see. And I love being able to watch it and learn about it. But it's when we talk about the athletes coming into environments, you know, I've got some athletes that walk into our sessions and they're the only ones who look the way they do. I'm really conscious of that because I could only imagine how intimidating that could be for an athlete, especially a young athlete who's sort of, you know, going through so many other things at that stage of their life. And so, you know, one of the things I always make sure I do is speak to their parents and say, is there anything, because I don't have a connection to their culture, and think, is there anything I can do to make this environment more attractive to them or more comfortable for them? Is there anything, you know, that we can get, you know, that the athletes together, or is that, you know, because sometimes when you force it, it gets a bit, you know, like, but, you know, do you have any tips for me to help make this environment better for them? Sometimes it's, nah, she'll be fine. She'll just let her go. She'll be fine. Sometimes it's, oh, you know, she similar to what you were saying, needs a sort of someone that she's comfortable with, sort of with her for and then once she's comfortable, she'll be fine, and all those sort of things. But I would definitely encourage coaches to speak to the parents of athletes, that, you know, if they're coming into your environments and they look a little bit overwhelmed or a little bit intimidated, speak to the parents and see if there is anything you can do, because at the very worst, they'll tell you nothing, and then at least, you've tried. Anyway.
Exactly right. A couple of really quick questions for you before we let you go, because we know you've got a busy schedule today with the game tonight in particular. A coach that's inspired you, like, who would that be in your world?
From when I played or just in general? That's hard. I would have to say, as a player, the connection I had with Brad Hampson. So he was my under 16 rep coach. I was a little bit of a mental case. I was a bit of a perfectionist, didn't want to fail, and as a result, actually was negative outcome. You know, so, like, you know, I missed a couple of shots, I got in my head and stuff. So he was really good with that. And when I got the NBL one job for the first time at the Goldie, he was living somewhat locally, so I hit him up and we worked together. So that was awesome. And so I've kept that friendship years after. As a coach, I'd say Darren Alley, yep. who happens to be First Nations as well, but yep. my very first year coaching NBL One, he actually reached out to me to see if I wanted an assistant.
Yeah, awesome.
And he was living northern New South Wales, so he had to drive a bit. He wasn't there all the time, but he was there whenever I needed to call him. And, I reckon those two. Yep. And then most recently, John, like working with him at Pirates.
Yep.
I know now if I need anything, I can pick up the phone and call him. So, yeah,
awesome.
Yeah, I think, those relationships beyond
yep.
the game itself, yeah.
Yeah, awesome. I was going to ask you what your favourite team activity is, but I think you've answered it with the speed dating and the yarning beforehand. Which I think, and again, would recommend every coach do with their team. Like, get to know your team a little bit better and let them know you a little bit better as a coach. I think it's a really powerful thing. One word to describe your coaching style. I can just leave it at
the laugh says it all.
I just think it depends which level I'm at, to be honest. But I'm going to say the last 6 to 12 months, I've really tried to transition into making sure the environment's fun. So while I still push, I think the more I've gone to development-based stuff and the way the game's going now, the environment needs to be fun because it's a game first. So, yeah, probably more that. I've tried to joke a little bit more during the session rather than just when we leave the court and stuff. So yep. I don't know that you could define me as fun now. That's what I hope. I hope people would say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was fun. I really enjoyed it. It's been a great chat to learn a little bit more about it. You can obviously follow along with the IBA socials and would recommend having a look at that. We'll say congratulations because we know tonight's going to go super well. And by the time this comes out, we'll all be talking about congratulations.
But or we'll edit this part and say and bad luck.
Do you want to do both? No.
Supremely you won't. Yeah, like a MasterChef ending.
Supremely confident. But you can obviously follow along with all the work that Cass does and the IBA in particular. We're both wearing a pair of shoes that Cass has designed. As well, which is fantastic. So if you do want to follow along on our socials, where can they get in touch with you on your social media accounts?
So the artwork, that's Deadly Creations.
Yep.
By CD. and then my academy stuff's Fortitude Training.
Awesome. Cass, thanks very much for jumping in. Really enjoyed it and good luck tonight, but congratulations at the same time.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Big thanks again to Cass Dover for jumping in on the podcast this week. It's fantastic to get a real insight into what is going on in that Indigenous Basketball Australia landscape in particular. And a lot of great takeaways there, in particular for coaches trying to build connection with their players and making sure that it is a safe and welcoming environment for all their players in that space as well. Because we do have a little bit of time, we'll have a book club.
Many leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
So with Book Club this week, it is Every Moment Matters, how the world's best coaches inspire their athletes and build championship teams. So the book has been out for a few years now. It's written by John O'Sullivan, who is the founder of the Changing the Game Project, and great podcast to listen to. So if it's a great website with some resources on there to go about coaching. So it's a practical research-backed guide that challenges coaches to move from transactional to transformational leadership in what they do as a coach. So a few of the big takeaways that came from the book from my read on it. Coaching is leadership, not just instruction. So making sure that we are empowering our players with purpose, vision, and core values and what that's going to look like. So it's not just on winning with your team. It is about developing people as a whole. Making sure that every interaction counts. So being mindful of things like body language, how to choose your words carefully, especially when you're under pressure, and praising effort and not just outcomes in that space. Intentional culture building. So Cass spoke about it a lot with what they do with the IBA in particular, but establishing what shared values are, empowering athlete ownership on what goes on, and just making sure that talent doesn't override the culture. And that's something that we do see a lot now with the influx of more and more mixtapes and highlight reels and those sorts of things coming out. It does lend itself a little bit to people trying to be the superstar rather than trying to buy into a team culture in that sort of space. Making sure we are coaching the person and not just the player. So using empathy and emotional intelligence to be the best coach that we can be, finding out what motivates each athlete individually and helping athletes develop beyond sports. Again, we're trying to develop great people, not just great basketballers. The two of them can go hand in hand in that sort of space. Making sure that we are having coaches that are constant learners, be humble, curious, and committed to personal growth, reflection, and feedback. And that will, of course, infiltrate into our player space as well. So making sure that we are continually striving to go and be better in that world. And, of course, redefining success. So it's not just about winning. Winning is an important part of what coaches go through, and it can be a difficult space to navigate, of course, but it is one of those areas too that it shouldn't all be about the win. So growth, development, joy, and character for players, coaches, and parents in that space. So making sure that we do focus on the process over the results. Athlete well-being and love of the game is always front of mind with what we do. So throughout the book, there are tons of things in there that John puts in about reflection questions for coaches, some stories from coaches in other sports that can probably resonate with what we do, making sure that you have actionable steps to create a coaching philosophy, and tips for better communication and trust building. It is a great read from a holistic perspective more than anything else. It's not just about X's and O's on the court. It's more about, can we be better coaches, and what are some of the things that we can do to be better coaches that don't necessarily require the tactical nous. It's the empathetic coaches are the ones over the next few years that are going to be the ones that really push our sport forward, I feel. So having an awareness of what that looks like, sounds like, feels like, and how we can go about that is going to make it a safer space for our players to play in. And we're just going to get more out of our players. They'll stick around the sport longer. They'll want to do extra work. They'll try and find ways to motivate other people around them. And they'll just be better humans at the end of it. So that's a big part of what we really want from our players. So would highly recommend it. Every Moment Matters. So John O'Sullivan, again, great website, great podcast to listen to as well. So if you're looking for more resources on that, you can jump on their website and download as much as you need from there. That does wrap us up for this week. Coaches, thanks very much for jumping in, and we'll catch everyone on the podcast again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.